This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Dr. Scott Hutchins, Undersecretary for Research, Education, and Economics at the Department of Agriculture in Washington. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with USDA's Dr. Scott Hutchins next. Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization sub-agency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Billions of dollars are spent annually on agriculture research by industry and governments alike. Dr. Scott Hutchins is Chief Scientist for USDA and Undersecretary for Research, Education, and Economics. He says the USDA's Proving Grounds Network for Ag Tech is helping provide insight for farmers as they embrace new technologies for their operations.
In terms of the long-term solutions which we focus on, what we're trying to do is get to the point where we use the science and technology and all the great tools we have today with artificial intelligence and with remote sensing and automation, and we have an opportunity now to utilize those for precision intervention, is what I call. Let's talk about soil fertility. You know, the vision that we have long term is that we're able to very precisely measure, and almost simultaneously, when I say almost, I mean during the same pass of the tractor or the implement, to be able to apply just the right amount of fertilizer or nutrient, depending on what the mix is, to the plant and to the soil, for what it needs. We believe that when we reduce that to practice, we will not hinder at all any of the yield productivity or capability of the plants or the crops, but we'll use a significantly less amount of actual product, which will reduce the input costs. We also think that we can use the technology as well from an environmental standpoint, so that as we are applying and we know that we're near sensitive areas, whether they're, you know, turn rows or whether they're areas near watersheds or whatever they might be, that we can adjust that automatically to accommodate for those sensitivities. So again, our approach is to help develop these technologies, and the tactic that we've taken just to make the transition is the proving ground concept. And why do I say that? Is because there are a number of companies that are already working in that space, in the space of precision weed management, in the space of digital scouting, in the space of animal agriculture, such as on animal health evaluations and geofencing. These things are cropping up out there. The farmers and ranchers don't really have a good, consistent, and reliable source of information on how well they're working, if they're ready for deployment, and what the return on investment is. And so the proving ground concept is really to help provide that. But the part that isn't often talked about that excites me the most is the fact that it also gives us the opportunity and venue to work with these companies, many of which, if not most of which, are not based in agriculture, to help them adjust and adapt and steer their inventions and their technology toward agricultural opportunities and issues. So we'll be working with them hand in hand through either the Agriculture Research Service or our many land grant universities to help them get over the finish line with their technology. And the reason why is because if they get over the finish line and make their technology work the way it's designed and receives a strong grade from the proving grounds, then we know it's in a good position to be adopted by our farmers. And our end game is to get these new, exciting, and useful technologies in the hands of our farmers and ranchers. And that's all about profitability.
It's common for companies to talk about the billions of dollars that they're investing in innovation and toward the sustainability and productivity of farmers. It is a headline that has been shared that the U.S. is not spending as much money from an independent standpoint, from government research, as other governments around the world. So help us to balance and understand, why is it important for our government, our land-grant universities, to do similar research or collaborate with research that companies are already doing?
Absolutely. And, you know, and let me just first take that first question about the funding piece of it. I mean, it is true that there are other countries around the world, notably China, that spends a lot more money in the area of agriculture research. But two things to keep in mind. First of all, those numbers are never on a per capita basis. So if you just look at the amount spent per resident or per citizen, we still have a very significant lead. And secondly, China has been pretty far behind, relatively speaking. Now they're catching up quickly. But what we have that is really our secret sauce is developed back in the 1860s, and that is our land grant system and our partnership with the federal research agency. So we have the trifecta of the research, the education, which is a continuing supply of students and users, and the extension service itself. So I don't think when you put it all together with our land grant system, with our federal agents, research agencies, and the third piece of that, the critical piece, is the private sector. I don't think we have an equal or a rival really in the world in this area. I choose not to spend, and I don't believe it's the right way to look at everything just based on how much money is spent. I think we have to look at what the outcomes are and the productivity is and the use of those dollars that we do have.
So let's talk about the relationship or the pathway, if you will. There is the research lab that we have known in Belleville, Maryland. And then there is this element where you've discussed the Proving Grounds Network. How do the laboratories and the research and the greenhouses, how do those relate to and carry forward the Proving Grounds?
Well, we have in the agriculture research, we have over 90 laboratories and groups. Beltsville or BARC is just one of those. It is certainly a large one, and it has been over the years, and it's been a productive lab for probably over 100 years now. And the research that we're conducting there, at least the research has been funded by Congress, is going to continue in every way. It's simply going to be relocated to a place where we have better facilities, where we have more modern equipment, and we also have a science staff that can support the individuals that would be coming in. So contrary to some of the narrative, we are not stopping research that's being conducted at BARC. In fact, in many ways, we're doubling down on it by making sure that it has a sustained future and that it can continue and actually grow. Now, to the other part of your question is, how does that link? For example, we do have, at various labs, we have research and activities in the area of digital agriculture. So we are not unfamiliar at all with some of these concepts that I've talked to you about, and we've had some of our own innovations. But what I have to emphasize is that when it comes to getting solutions on the farm that are technologically based, those are going to come from the private sector. You know, the USDA and the U.S. government largely is not going to be making drones or bots or tractors or anything you can imagine that ultimately is something that's going to be on farm. What we can do and what we are extraordinarily good at is understanding how to fine tune those, how to utilize those to solve the problems and the solutions. And in the case of the Proving Grounds, what we're able to do is we're able to do some objective testing and some objective evaluations so that the farmers, before they invest money, and it's usually a lot of money, that they understand the return on investment and they understand what solutions can actually be provided. You referenced some of these conventions. If you just take, for example, the Commodity Classic, which you're probably familiar with, right? If you walk those grounds, that's multiple acres of convention space, and everybody has a solution to sell, and everybody has the best one that they're promoting. That's fine. That's their job. That's what they do. But we feel like our farmers and ranchers need to take a look at those collectively and be able to provide not recommendations, we're not in the business of recommendations, but objective data that shows performance against a consistent and a validated goal of performance, and also provide information and insight on return on investment so farmers know what they're getting into and how they might compare that return on investment to what they presently do so that they can make educated and informed decisions.
Scott, I'm in my 60s, and I have seen the same fields that had a mule and a plow. I've seen tractors arrive, two-row, four-row, massive planters. I've seen hybrid seed corn show up. I've seen commercial fertilizers show up. Now genetically engineered crops, post-emergence herbicides with plants that are resistant to herbicides and also have their own mechanism fighting against insects. And now precision agriculture that literally takes the grid space to the size of a quarter. So my question, are farmers today adapting in technology as rapidly as we have? And what are the frontiers that you see row crop farmers utilizing in years to come?
Yeah, great question. And I've seen all those, and my first career was in the private sector, and I've been involved with a lot of the developments that you just outlined. And it's been very rewarding to see those. And they've all been, some have been incremental and some have been major step changes. But, you know, one thing that's been in common with most of those technologies, whether you're talking about the herbicide-tolerant traits or the BT traits in corn, or you're talking about a new insecticide or a new fungicide, all of those are very heavily regulated products. And what that means is that the farmer or the rancher will have an opportunity to see those in action 3 to 4 years minimum before they're ever actually legally available to buy them before they get their registration from EPA or whoever. So they have a pretty good sense before they can actually put their money on the table what these products are going to do and how they fit them. In the area of digital ag and ag tech, the way we've described it, they're not regulated, which is a good thing. We're not advocating for that. But what we do need is to fill that gap so that farmers do have a consistent source so that they understand what they will do before they have the opportunity to buy them. You brought up a very important comment, and that's adoption. The number one thing that's going to keep U.S. farmers ahead of the curve and ahead of the other countries and ahead of the profit line, and on the good side of the profit line, is their willingness to adopt technologies early. But to do that, they need confidence that it's a good financial decision, and that's what we're hoping to provide them, is an insight into what the technologies can do and what they can return for them should they go that way. The other thing I'll say is that in that process, as these technologies come online and we have automation, we have things that can run 24/7, we have things that significantly reduce labor, whether it's automated harvesting and specialty crops or whatever it might be, I think we're going to drastically see some shifts. I mean, they'll all be market driven. They won't be imposed, but they'll all be market driven where we start to see miniaturization of things, of technologies, and that will reduce the capital load on farmers and ranchers, hopefully, because that's one of the number one issues and constraints we have with diversification and with profitability, is the tremendous amount of capital that modern farming and ranching organizations have to have and invest in.
I think our Department of Agriculture, over a period of time, especially when our soldiers returned after World War II, we were looking at how to feed a nation. We wanted an ample food supply, we wanted an affordable food supply, and we took for granted that it was safe. But is there not a paradigm shift now of consumer attitudes, their perceptions and their objectives, not just having food, but having it the way that they want it done? And it is the consumer acceptance of that technology that seems to be as important today as the farmer adoption of those technologies.
You couldn't be more right. I mean, it's a very complex scenario in terms of demand. And depending on where you are on the development curve as a country and as a civilization, you know, if you're just hungry, if that's the driver, then there's a lot of things that you do to focus strictly on production. At this point in time, we are at the crossroads where we can also start to design foods for nutrition and for health. We understand more and more how foods impact chronic health and how individuals with their individual genetics, and we call this precision nutrition, how individuals with a specific set of genetics are predisposed to certain chronic diseases and how the foods they choose can impact that. They also have preferences, as you alluded to, with regard to how the foods are grown. In what scenario they're grown. I mean, you can go on the internet and find, you know, you can choose how your beef was grown and what cut it is and where it comes from and all that. Now, there's a price to be paid for all that specialization, but clearly there is a large segment that's willing to pay for it and feels that's the way they should do it. So we are trying to create a broad set of solutions that meet as many of those criteria as we can. And again, I will use the example of what we're trying to do with Digital Ag. If we can precisely spray weeds and not the crop, then we don't have concerns that currently exist with weed resistance. Why is that? Because if you can kill every weed, then there's no survivors to become resistant. And you can go through there many times with a particular piece of equipment. If you're not spraying over the crop, you don't have the tolerances, then you don't have the drift or the volatilization that you would normally have when you spray over the top in today's system. There's nothing wrong with today's system, but you know, we've been doing herbicide tolerant crops and spray overs for over 30 years now, and it's served us very well, and I'm sure it will in the future. But we need to start making a transition, because the discovery of those traits, the discovery of new herbicides, has fallen way behind, and so we need to find other ways. And that's just one example. You know, scouting for insects, which I'm an entomologist. My first job was as a cotton scout. It's a very imprecise job. It's better than nothing, but it's still very imprecise. We have the opportunity now with drones to do digital scouting, where you can precisely see in a field and where in a field you'll have an insect infestation or a disease infection, and then you can specifically treat those areas before they become out of control. So, you know, you're bringing up a great point, and what I would say is, at this stage, with the way the technology is booming and the different technologies we have, it's only limited by our imagination and our willing to really work toward finding those solutions. And not coincidentally, many of those solutions are the same kinds of solutions that would be very well appreciated and endorsed by a lot of the people who are looking for that kind of specialty production activities, whether it's organic or whatever it might be. So I think we're moving in the right path on all fronts. Everybody's always going to have their own unique piece, but we have to try to solve as many problems for as many people as we can. And that's what our farmers and ranchers are working on, because they have to work on a large scale.
Doc, I would invite you to lean in on this if you can, and it's an issue before the nation today. Just a few days ago, AgriPulse Newsmakers, we had Administrator Zeldin on, and he talked about the backlog that had been left of the registrations and re-registrations of pesticides and chemistries that farmers use, and looking forward to seeing those as tools in the toolbox. There are those who would question, and I think even some of our companies today, why do we search for a science that consumers won't accept? There was a period of time that if you used science, then it was accepted. But the question now is whose science, and whether the consumer will actually embrace these elements that are helping farmers be sustainable and are helping them meet productivity goals.
We do at times have conflicting objectives. Our farmers need a toolbox, and they need a toolbox of modern tools. And having been in that industry, what I can say is the administrator's exactly right. We do need tools, but I think, this is my opinion, what has happened over time is that the criteria for being able to develop something and get it through the regulatory system has become so challenging, and the bar is so high that we have a gap. It's been difficult to find technologies that will get through there. And in the meantime, the farmers still need tools, so some of the older technologies remain on the market. And so if we could ever develop a true innovation strategy for agriculture, where we would have agreement on, you know what, this submission or this new technology, it's not a home run, but it's a really good improvement over what we have today, and we need to make a big step, even if we can't make the final step, to the next piece. And I wish that we would collectively as a agricultural community, as a broader community, recognize that we can't let perfect be the enemy of better. And there is a lot of opportunity for us to improve a lot of the technologies, and I don't know the ones that the administrator is talking about, but I'm sure there's a lot of them in there that can really improve the current scenario and allow us to have a better portfolio of tools, even as we go the next step after that to try to find the ones that are even the next level above. But this search for the perfect solution, the silver bullet, as we call it, is become a huge challenge and a very difficult lift. And they're only, and that's why, honestly, there's only a few companies in the world left that are willing to make those kind of investments, to be able to even try to find those.
In a conversation with Deputy Secretary Vaden, he suggested that this 26 is the year of real restructuring at USDA. Within your mission areas, are you able to restructure, and to streamline and still meet the objectives that are set before you?
Unequivocally, yes. There's two components to it. The first is, as you referred to, the restructuring. So all four of our agencies within REE have themselves, and this is a bottom-up effort, have themselves identified areas on how they would like to restructure. You know, so much has changed in the last 10 years. I mean, just previous to us and everything else. In these agencies, and they haven't really stepped back and done much of a restructuring. So we gave them that opportunity. We empowered them to say, start with a clean sheet of paper and how would you structure your agency? And they took that opportunity on with zeal because they recognize there's a lot of opportunity to do several things. One is to streamline management to make sure that the levels between the administrator and the folks who are on the ground, as you were reduced, and that always makes organizations more efficient. The opportunity to create a special focus on some of these new technologies we've talked about, such as AI and satellite geospatial data and technologies and so forth. We're trying to really drive and make sure that we understand these and can use these to support our mission. So the restructuring piece is all positive, and it's all focused on helping our scientists be more productive, helping our economists understand more of the key questions they need to address for policy, and also helping us, at the end of the day, become a more efficient organization, but not less effective in that process. And so even as we focus on the restructuring, we're also focused on expanding our mission to take on more challenges and more opportunities. And we have a very bullish mindset in terms of the impact that all of our agencies are going to make and the impact that we will have and have had and will continue to have on U.S. agriculture.
I've listened to comments by Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins about research priorities and new research and development priorities that falls under your mission area. How do you embrace these, and is there any one of these that really stands out in the day and time that we're in?
Well, thank you for that question. Let me just say first that Secretary Rollins is the first Secretary of Agriculture that we're aware of who worked collaboratively with us together to actually identify and publish and establish in a memo context the research priorities for USDA. That's never been done before. That's not an insignificant attribution to her belief of the impact of research and the utilization of science for decision making. Having said that, there are five priorities of research that we have from the Secretary, and I've already alluded to one of them, and it's all about helping our farmers and ranchers become more profitable. So you've heard some of the things that we're doing in that regard and in that context. Another one, and this is one that you'll recognize as well, is to expand our markets and to expand the products and the byproducts of agriculture to support our overall development of trade and new products and new solutions from current agricultural areas. Invasive species is the third one. We have always in the United States, we seem to have more than our share of invasive species that we need to deal with. We do that hand in hand with APHIS and our other partner agencies. Another one, and the generic term is soil health, but let me define soil health. When I think of soil health, what I'm looking for productivity-wise is I'm looking to ensure that our U.S. farmland is perpetually more productive from one year to the next. If it's perpetually more effective from one year, productive from one year to the next, then it is almost by definition healthy. And if we see that we need to do things to ensure that that perpetual productivity stays in place, that's where we need to make sure that we have interventions such as, you know, the regenerative ag techniques, including things such as cover crops. There's many techniques, and the challenge with soil health and regenerative ag is there are no 2 acres at exactly the same, and even 1 acre is not the same this year as it will be next year. So it does take a lot of customization. It takes a lot of focus from our science and researchers to make sure that we work with Extension and others to help farmers understand how to keep their soil productive.
Well, Dr. Scott Hutchins, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. You have a lot of plates spinning, a lot of things under your purview there in the USDA, and we thank you for taking time for that. You are our guest, and on this program, Dr. Hutchins, you have the last word today.
Well, thank you so much for letting me join. I really appreciate it. We are so excited and encouraged by the great work that we are doing at USDA, and specifically in our group with the Research Education Economics. We have a tremendous potential to help U.S. farmers and U.S. ranchers become more profitable and more productive, and we're excited and honored to have the mission to help them in that regard.
Our thanks to this week's Open Mic guest, Dr. Scott Hutchins, Undersecretary for Research, Education, and Economics at the Department of Agriculture in Washington. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back at controlweedsnotfarming.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellick.